Oh, hi. Hey there, travelers. If you are not on YouTube, you should get on YouTube because this is a video. We have a guest that has traveled the same footsteps as Lawrence of Arabia. He's also a veteran and just a real life adventurer. We are more than happy to introduce Mr. Wells Jones to you. Be sure to check out his book, Line in the Sand. Easy read. Took me 6 hours because you could download it on like Audible, for example. 6 hours. It's easy. Awesome. Great book. We're going to talk about it. We're going to jump right in onto the episode.
Could I get your names again so I know who I'm writing?
Sure. Yeah.
You're Imad?
Yeah, Imad right here.
Imad. Okay. And again?
And I'm Cody in the middle.
See, I'm looking at you, but it doesn't look like I'm looking
That's
at
okay.
you.
That's okay. Same deal here.
Same, our camera's a little offset. Our camera's a little bit to our left. So yeah. If we're looking like this, we're looking at you.
Yeah, fuck that.
And, I'm Matt.
Matt. Nice to meet you, Matt. Okay, you guys are wearing fake beards?
Yeah. You want me to take it off?
We stopped on the way. Only felt it appropriate.
Guys, that's great.
Been working on this for a minute.
For the episode, we've got, you know, I listened to your book. Matt's listened to your book. Amazing.
Wonderful book.
So cool.
Wonderful book.
Like,
did you like Eduardo Ballerini, the guy that
he did a great job.
Yeah.
You know what? We were so fortunate to get him. It's always, you know, it's like somebody knows someone. And you say, oh, you got to check him out. And
yeah, he was really good with the voices. He did a great job, like separating the characters and stuff. Yeah, yeah, it was awesome.
Thank you very much for listening.
Of course. I love the twist in it. Like the time travel. I had to rewind. Like, did I hear that correctly? I had to go back and re-listen to that part. I was like, they are time traveling. That's crazy. Mm-hmm.
And it was when we came up with the dagger. I mean, you know, it kind of slides into, I mean, our thinking is it's historical fiction, and the history is what it's really about. But it's the entertainment. As you know, if you can pull people in with the entertainment, you can get the messages out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the time travel, it seemed contemporary. And we've been dealing with a Broadway play for 20 years. We've had 4 writers. The most recent writer has got it down. And we've had names. I could say names, no need to. British people. This is an American woman. And wow, she just came up with how to bring T.E. Lawrence and Gertrude Bell and Amir Faisal and the Klan together on one night at the Paris Peace Conference. And so it's just, you know, been pulled into a very particular situation where they're really trying to reverse the agreement, particularly the Sykes-Picot, where they just divided up the Middle East.
Yeah.
When I say they literally did it in 2016, before the end of the war. And so Lawrence was fighting under a lie, telling the Arabs, yeah, we're going to get it. They find out about it, goes, yeah, but if we get to Damascus first, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
So it's the story underneath it, and we did the track in 2006.
I just found out about that. I want to hear about that. That's, yeah.
You know, it's wild because for us, Miles and I had been separated. I was working in D.C. We're both, we're living on the East Coast. He's in Connecticut. I was in New York, just very close to each other on the borderline and just outside of New York City. And when I met up with him in 2005, he said, hey, you know anything about T.E. Lawrence? I said, yeah. You do? I said, I was trained as an actor. I said, I was looking for somebody to do like Hal Holbrook doing Mark Twain. And it was my mother said, you should do Lawrence of Arabia. I'm thinking Peter O'Toole. The guy was 5'5" and that was very integral to who this cat was.
Yeah.
I mean, he outperformed everyone. He was more Bedouin than Bedouin. And that's where he got all this respect and his love of the culture. And really, the guy was about Mort d'Arthur. He was all about the medieval knights. Nice. That was his draw. And he found himself in a position where he went from, you know, all this Oxford or you know, jacket and shorts and being on an archaeological dig to just slowly taking on the costume, the kit, of the people around him and learning Arabic, and they just fell in love with him. He found a place that he didn't have in England, and he stuck with it, and it just evolved into intelligence, into spying, and then boom, there was a war, and many things happened. We found that he was the one that had a voice that was positive about the Arabs, positive about the Middle East.
Yeah.
And everything that was happening in 2005, I mean, that was the heat of the war.
Yeah.
And you know, the whole concept of weapons of mass destruction and that lie that just hung in there to continue, you know, what? Getting more oil.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many parts, you know, when we do the actual recording of this, so many questions, because that book was awesome. Just like,
yeah.
Did he do this? Like, there's so many things that I'm like, did he do this? This is so cool.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Well, the thing is, it is a novel.
Yeah.
And the history is spot on. When we hit a certain city in the book, while in real life, when we hit the city, we're looking at the book, we're remembering everything, all the research we did.
Mm-hmm.
But when in the book, obviously, it's like eavesdropping in on what was going on in that place at that time.
Yeah.
And so that is some of the wording, but the temperament and the ideas that were expressed, especially with Lowell Thomas, who made this guy, Lawrence of Arabia, it was unheard of. I mean, the first rock star was T.E. Lawrence.
Yeah.
He was a media phenomenal. I mean, it was just unbelievable. At the same time, he was absolutely, totally ashamed of the betrayal. And yet he was watching him. He'd sneak in and see what was going on, and the thrill of the people. Sold out Madison Square Garden even before it went to England.
Wow.
Anyone who sells out Madison Square Garden. Yeah. Anytime. Come on.
Yeah, that's nuts.
People wanted it.
I honestly didn't know a lot about Lawrence of Arabia. I knew the name, I knew of him, but didn't really know much. I want to research more on this guy, because
You've definitely brought an interest to me to look into it.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. You know, I'm hearing that from people that like it, that are into it. They said, I'm doing, you know, the old deeper dive, but they are saying, I just didn't know. I mean, this cat wrote the description of guerrilla warfare in the encyclopedia. And when you read it, not only is it a beautiful piece of prose, but it is just elegant in its description of what guerrilla warfare is. And he figured out, hey, what's happening here?
This is Lilith.
That's Lilith, the evil demon.
Right. Yeah, I see a hand at the table. There we go. This is the hand.
That's Felicia. She's not mic'd up right now.
Hello, peace too. Yeah. So, if you're into it, there's a lot, and it's been beautiful. We started doing podcasts in November. Between us now, there are like 33 that are available, and there's another 20 that are recorded or being recorded.
Cool. Nice.
And it's been beautiful because the campaign has been about Lawrence, specifically about the Middle East, the people, the current.
Mm-hmm.
History or adventure? The adventure world in the podcast world is like, you know, I never thought about it, never really talked about it. When you start looking at life, and I'm not a young guy.
You still do a lot, though. You're still climbing mountains and shit. That's crazy.
Oh yeah. I was on it this morning. The nice. Thing is that there's always been purpose behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that early. I learned that when I almost bought it, skydiving. And that was, you know, at 20 years old, hot shot, you know, in the 70s, early, you know, mid 70s, and feeling the oats, you know, feeling, wow. We actually jumped we were the opening act for the Blue Angels.
Wow.
In California, really? A big air show. And so that was cool. And I almost fell out of the helicopter because I thought, oh, I don't have to clip in. I'm just hanging the door.
Oh.
And just enjoy. This is just three of us. And is taking us up. It's a twin jet engine helicopter. And I say the word Mavericks, but that's what we were titled in. Like the Boston Globe did an article on us and different people back then. You're saying these are Mavericks, you know. And of course, Maverick, the movie Maverick, you know, Tom Cruise and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's the independent thinking. And you know what? You can get your ass in it. Excuse me. You can get your
you're good.
In it.
Oh, you're good.
Let it fly.
Yeah. And ego can kill you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I learned that early. I did. I learned it early in two situations where, one, I wanted to let go because it was too painful. And then the very person that I had an issue with pulled me out of it. And he walked me through it. It was two steps. I could go into it at another time, but it was hair-raising. And then the helicopter taking a right bank. And the only thing that saved me, I'm 6'3", my legs are long, and it caught the skid. My heels caught the skid of the helicopter to keep me from going. And I just leaned back into the cabin, right up against the guy that was just kneeling down, checking things out, and he's ready to jump. Another guy on the other side of the door, but he clipped in. I didn't.
Ooh,
God.
I just thought, you know, you see it on TV now. You know, people just run up to the helicopter, sit in the door, and it's gone.
Mm-hmm. But, gravity doesn't play.
And I'm not kidding you. It was, I was sitting there. I was shaking. I basically pissed my pants.
I don't blame you.
And I said, "What are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you doing this? I don't want to do this." It's like, "This guy, I don't want to do this." The helicopter leveled off. Hey, everything good? I was like, "Yeah," shaking like, I mean. And we're going on a streamer run. It's where we toss out streamers. It's just crepe paper tied to a little rod to get your jump, you know, exit point from the helicopter. And you go up to altitude and check it out, play, jump, you know, and do what you want to do. And this is just north of Malibu, where we were doing it. And the answer came to me, and it said, transportation. Transportation. You are on a parachuting rescue team. There's a need. It's Antarctica. There's a need down there. This is just a quick way to get to them because you can't land. It's out of range of a helicopter. The airplane can't land. It's not ready. You need to get down there. And it just solved it. There was my purpose. First time. Also, get rid of the ego. You think you're so hot? You know what? Like that, you can just call it. Yeah. And don't put yourself in that position.
You said Antarctica?
Yeah, I was on the Antarctic Pararescue Team.
Okay, wow. Yeah, I did read a little bit of it. I purposely pulled away just for our episode because I do want to... Oh, man, I've got so many questions. It's awesome.
Well, now I was young, but it was eye-opening. And even to get on the team... to, you know, sitting in a club drinking 2% beer, you know, being 18 years old, you can't drink even 21. But in the Navy, they had it at the, you know, the enlisted man's club. And I saw this guy sitting with these wings with a parachute in the middle. I'd never seen anything like that. What's that? Parachute wings. So for what? I'm on the parachuting rescue team. Where? Here. The squadron. How do you get on? You got to apply, and you got to pass.
I was going to say, what kind of schooling do you need to do something like this?
Well, that we could get into that, but it was basically, you know, the training. A lot of it was in-house stuff. A lot of it was medical. A lot of it was very specifically, very practical stuff. You know, from advanced first aid, but also applied to extreme situations, extreme. Cold, altitude, wind. I mean, when I say cold, you know, minus big numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of conditioning.
You know, but I'd been done some ski patrol in Vermont. That's where I came from. So pieces, you know, I was just meant, it was meant to be. And I loved it. And in 1977, January 19th, did a skydive at free fall at the South Pole. And, you know, people tend to look at numbers and I'd say, yeah, I'm number seven. There were a couple of jumps before going way back. This is a free fall and there was no other jump until at the South Pole 20 years later, almost, you know, it was a little earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm.
That was six, a couple of European guys and four Americans. Three lived.
Whoa. Dang. These kind of shoots, because I know a lot of the, I know like with the Army, the shoots, you can't direct them or anything, they fall down fast. Are these those kind of shoots, or can you?
No.
You can control them more?
The first couple of jumps was on a 35-foot TU is what they called it, and it was steerable, but it was just a great big, huge Cadillac. I mean, it was just, you know, and it was one where you land, you have to do a parachute landing fall, and I said, no effing way, I'm going to do a stand-up. You know, I figured,
oh, you break your legs.
All that kind of stuff. You know, you find out how to go to the next level. And, you know, we had two Stratus Stars that were brand new, but they were extremely, they were almost like prototypes because the opening on them was so intense that guys were getting knocked out, unconscious.
Wow.
It was just the way it was packed into the back as smaller shroud lines, and it's a ram air. Now you see them all over the place because it's been perfected. It was five cells. We jumped paracommanders. Paracommanders are precision. It wasn't, you know, nothing beats what's happening today. And that's the Strata Star and the Strata Cloud were 1975 is when they came out, and we had a couple. I did not jump one. I was still on a paracommander, which was the hot one. And I had my own and I loved it and I knew it. And, you know, you pack your own, nobody touches your gear.
Yeah. I've heard of that as well. Like, you pack your own parachute, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard that if you pack someone else's parachute and it's wrong, is that like manslaughter?
Well, I don't know that. There's just no one that would do that unless they're absolutely freaking insane.
Yeah.
You don't do that. What we would do is we would just turn the parachute, turn it around backwards.
Oh, no.
So they think they're going forward, but, they, you know, it's just, or put a bunch of dirt in the thing.
That's messed up.
That's brutal. You know, it's like sitting on a C-130. You got, you know, three new guys and they're sitting over there, and it doesn't matter who or what you are. If it's your first jump, you may be excited, but you're also like intensely nervous. So sitting on a runway, sometimes a C-130, other flights are coming off or jets are happening. And it was a while, and it was like, I'm buckled, get ready to go. They're sitting across from me, and I'm one of the leaders, and just saying, okay, altimeter. And we're just sitting on the ground, playing. And so you lose track. You go, whoa, did we take off? Yeah, we must have taken off. He's saying, I'm buckled. But anyway, we played around with each other just to keep each other on our toes.
Yeah.
Never would we ever go crazy. And we would only do it certain levels to certain people, and it would happen once.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't something you played around because it was something that was too important not to. I mean,
I can respect that. I'm glad there's some respect in there.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. What the thing that I found is that it was the first time in my life that I really had my own life in my hands, and I liked that. It was like, you're choosing this, and you're doing it, and it wasn't as pervasive a sport in the 70s, you know?
Yeah.
It was very unique, and we would jump at Paris Valley. Paris Valley right now in California is like big. It's like major drop zone. You know, they've got the ranch in the East Coast out of New York, and there are places in Arizona, they're all over. But, and I know they must be in Texas.
Oh, I'm sure.
But, you know. Yeah.
People but, do.
Yeah. But back then, no, 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 no. It was, you know, more primitive.
Yeah.
More primitive and unique. And so that's all. Anyway, I'm so glad you read the book.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That's, yeah. If there's whatever we end up doing, what I don't know what I'm trying to say here. I didn't really know anything about Gaza growing up in the U.S. Muslims are terrorists and Jewish people run everything. They're the bad guy, and this is just what I was fed forever. And you know, come around now. This is what I was fed, but I never believed it. I would close my ears to anybody and everything and just try to be a good person over here. Yeah. But certain things in the past 4 or 5 years have really started to kick up the fact that there is no, I can't just turn away from it. And I've learned a lot, and I can, it comes from all angles. Everybody is the bad guy, and we just need to stop. We just got to stop it. These thousand years wars, it's all too much. And your story, it's just a really good way to put that out there.
It's a primer.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, primer into it that people, what we've discovered. Miles said, I want, you know, his dad has passed on, but I would want my dad to go, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that. And that's what we found, that people just didn't know. And I said, that's okay, you know, but there's a foundation, and then there's an escalation, and you can get into whether it's Gaza and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And going there is just amazing. I mean, I know a bit about the Bible, and even being in Damascus in this, you know, the straight street, and you're going, wait a minute. Is this Ananias? You know, if you don't know that, but it's where Paul is Saul of Tarsus becomes St. Paul.
Yeah.
He's been struck by lightning on the road to Damascus. And then the voice says, go to Ananias' house and he'll tell you what to do. You know, and he says, stop fucking with the Christians. You know, what are you doing? You want to see again? Hey, stop this.
Yeah.
And going to Ananias' house.
You went?
Yeah.
Really?
You go, wait a minute, is this just, no, that was it?
Hopefully no lightning.
Yeah.
So the biblical things and the context and 39 checkpoints.
Mm-hmm.
Being invited by a major, His Royal Highness.
Yeah, the Prince. Yeah, that too. Jeez.
He was sudden. And after that, we ended up producing an 8-day sea festival for them, because we're production people. But, you know, we do producing, and Miles raises money. I'm production. And we did an 8-day sea festival. And I had a team that was just killer. You know, it's like you guys. You guys know what to do and you work. And I've done, you know, a number of things in large theaters in the United States, Kennedy Center, Lincoln Center. But doing that event in Saudi Arabia was just mind-blowing and an eye-opener. But that prince, and it was in his, there's provinces like states. Mm-hmm. That was in Sir, the lowest section of Saudi Arabia, near the Yemen, it butts up to the Yemen border. And doing an 8-day sea festival with intercontinental boat racing, F1 boats.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And having, it was the first time, you know, an American group came in and did something like this. But it was pretty amazing. And when we went to His Majesty's, getting in there, I mean, there's only certain stories in the book. There's a whole lot more. you know, we used without overwhelming people what people we thought would accept.
Mm-hmm.
And some things are rearranged to keep people from other people from being incriminated in situations, particularly the person that did the drinking of the Johnny Walker. I mean, that is just unheard of. And then you find out, well, it's not that much unheard of. I mean, it just depends upon who you are, where you are, and what your access is to a 400 real bottle of Johnny Walker. And you just go, what? That's like $300.
Yeah. And jail time. Yeah, that's wild.
I think you lose something. Yeah. You know, you always talk about a hand or this or that. And
a couple of digits.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. But I don't know specifically. But there's many stories. And Matt, what you're saying about Gaza, the thing that I think is a very telling line concerning the war and 9/11 is when Mags says, he's asked, you know, where were you at 9/11? Mm-hmm. Say, I was in DC and Miles is in Connecticut. And he talked about, he thought it was about retribution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those 19 dudes doing that clearly. And after October 7th, that's when we figured we must write this book. We've been working on a play really? For so long, so many voluminous notes to the playwright, meetings, discussions, I mean, just for years, I mean, a lot. So it's in our head. I don't know if you saw any of the pictures that I sent included in that package. There's some video and pictures from places.
Yeah.
And we have more.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, plenty. And I lost my train of thought because so much has happened going through my head.
You're talking about all the notes, putting the book together.
No, you had October to make the book 7th. After October 7th.
Yeah.
It was the next week Miles said, we've got to do the book. And we had started writing the book. We didn't have a hook into the book.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
You
know?
And that's what we came up with. And we had just run with the Bulls. We did the running of the Bulls in July 8th, 2023 in Pamplona.
Wow.
And we were in the mix. And we, you know, we run. But anyway, we put ourselves in at where all the hot shot, where the runners were, where the real on the horns guys were. And that's at the beginning. And then this whole, like it says in the book.
That was.
And that is what I said. It was like, balls. It was just like everything slow motion. And just these massive beasts. Anyway, that was in 2023.
Wow. That was in 2023.
It was a good hook to squat out and to bring Jeremy, who's a real person, and just put him there. We see him and he's goofy Jeremy wearing, you know, dude won't give up on the New York Knicks. It's like, that's you know, they're not going to win. So, anyway.
Wow, hell incredible. Yeah.
It was important to write it after October 7th, because if not now, when? When are we going to join the conversation? The play is not out. It's really far along. We've had actors, professional actors in New York, and we do little workshops, and then we do more work on the play, and then people have to go away, and then the team comes back, and there's all this the time and to do it.
Yeah.
But it is from that play and the thinking we ended up saying, and we wanted the play to be called A Line in the Sand, and the current writer, she insists it needs to be called Dinner at the Majestic. It's one evening, Gertrude Bell is hosting a party, you know, a gathering, and you know, things explode at the gathering. I mean, a lot of things, it's just cool. And we hope it's not done, but we like the direction, and we've stuck with this wonderful playwright. And so we wanted to get this book out. And so we did. We started literally right the next week. and we just dedicated and we published it on March 8th or something like that with Amazon.
Yeah, about a year ago I saw.
Yeah, and it was fast, but we had so much in our head, and the key was getting the outline, and it was just Miles is loves to cook, and so he said, you know what, let's put recipes in this.
Yeah, there he is. Okay, I was going to say one of you guys just loves food,
because it was like wherever we went, that's what it was. It was, I mean, when you sit down with people, one, you hear their stories. Even if there's an interpreter, you know, telling you, but for the most part, people spoke English. It's when there were checkpoints where, you know, you've got a guy with a rifle, not even, an assault rifle, you know, poking through the things that have been emptied out of a backpack. And he's going, Iowa, Iowa. You know, it's like, well, that's a B-GAN. He opens it up, and B-GAN's a broadband global access network. It looks like a computer. You open it up, like it is in when I'm with the agent in immigration and getting into Israel, Rappaport. Just like, what is this?
Yeah, that was intense.
Amazing. You got it through.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they said it's a broadband global access. And that's when she figured out, oh, you guys are. Triple Canopy or Blackwater. So I get it. You make a lot of money. You work for them. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so plenty of stories. The most important thing was to get the book out. The trick was finding the hook, and it just came because it was the right time. Mm-hmm. It just came between us, and we got it down. And then as you get an idea with a project going, and somebody comes in and they look at it and they have a little something, another layer to add to it, like, why don't we try this? Why don't we do this?
That's the magic.
That's how it evolved.
Yeah.
And we're writing our second book, and it's Magnus and Finn, and it's
a continuation of the characters.
Absolutely, it's a series, awesome. And it's all about that colonial grab, that colonial gaze. You know, it's that guy that's at the hearth, and he's decked out, just looking, or he's a painting, and above him is the painting of him.
Oh yeah,
he's the one, Lord so and so, that just everything up.
That's cool. When do you think that'll be done?
We're going to pre-sell, and we will publish. We were thinking the latest December.
Oh wow! Okay,
that's incredible.
But we're on to it, and it's called Havana Familia. So it is about Cuba, and it's about the going back to 1958, ultimately, and then there's a time travel device, and so present day is 2016.
That's a special year,
1958, mm-hmm. And it's when the rebel forces finally get to Havana. I mean, they've been through hell to come out of the jungle and trained, and it's sloppy, but they do, and Che and Fidel, they take over.
Yeah, that's wild. He took over. He was just a dude. Like, he wasn't anything huge. He was just a dude.
Motorcycle Diaries. You ever see Motorcycle Diaries?
No,
it's all okay. He's from a good family. He was a doctor, you know, and he just went on this ride with a friend on a wacky bike, and they just saw what it was like out in the rural areas and how the people were treated, and he just realized that they were being cheated. The governments were just corrupt, mm-hmm. keeping all the money from things and not helping the people.
Yeah.
So that's our intention, is to reveal that like to reveal in A Line in the Sand. And so it's a Line in the Sand series with Magnus and Finn.
That's so cool. I'm glad it keeps going. That's awesome.
Thank you.
It's good. It's so necessary in these times. We just need people thinking a little bit more.
It's hard. And how do we get him to do it? Because for me, I read. I didn't as a kid. Boy, I said, I'm not going to read. I'm Call of the Wild. No, I'm going to go to Alaska. Are you kidding me? Why would I sit here and read the book? I'm going.
See, that's real. Awesome. It exists. Why not go there? Yeah.
Well, I eat my words because, you know, you learn from the dead.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm totally into Marcus Aurelius and Seneca and Epictetus. I'm totally into Stoicism. You know, it's in part of the book, but the real stuff, oh yeah, I find that's practical. That, you know, handle what you can control and give up that other, you know, why the hell are they doing that? It's like,
I've been working on that kind of stuff myself. So yeah, the book, I could see that from, I'm assuming, your character. And so, yeah, there's,
I was Finn.
Yeah. I just, there were so many moments of just stopping, breathing.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a little bit of charisma to sway a situation, to calm something down. Mm-hmm. Just being more present. Yeah. That's, I relate to a lot of things going on in this book you got right here. I love it. Big fan.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah. It's cool how it shows, like, hey, these are people too. Like, the only things that we know is what the media tells us.
Yeah, you
know,
I'm sick
of
that.
It's good to hear from somebody who has been there, you know.
And that's why we went. To see with our own eyes, to hear, to understand, to get our feet in the sand. And we've read so much. I mean, I do have a few books. I have books all over the place. But the reading and the research for the play, that's when it started, the play, and then to go on this trek. I mean, we were trained by an SAS major, Jamie. And it turns out that he had just finished up with Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman for their long way around, their motorcycle trip. If you don't know about it, but these two guys, the actor and his friend, did three trips. But the first one's long way around, motorcycle on BMW's GS Adventures.
Nice.
And they needed to understand what they were getting into. And we did too, and it just turned out that we got the same guy, and he was just phenomenal. He was an expert in, he was with the Irish Guard. He was an expert with checkpoints, but kidnap and ransom. And he was very clear, inside the borders of Saudi Arabia, you get kidnapped, you're gone.
Yeah.
Colombia, they want $1 million, $2 million, pay it, you're released, you're fine. Yeah. Nah, it's political. And he said, and there's more going on than the public knows.
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
And so we spent good time with him and we used it. And by the time we got to that border crossing into Israel, we were so wiped out. I mean, just wiped out from so much. Now, we didn't ride camels the whole way. We did local cars and camels.
Yeah.
But the book is focused, you know, did the entertaining side, and there's a sense that, oh, they went all the way? No. But we did 4 days on camels from Aqaba to and through Wadi Rum. And that was three of us.
Was that because of the terrain? It was too hard on the vehicles or other reasons?
No, it was really, we wanted the camel riding is what we insisted we wanted to do. Horseback riding, same thing. But getting through to do that on camel would take much longer.
Yeah.
Than we had. We had just under a month to handle everything that we wanted to do. And so we found a travel company, really awesome group. It's called R. Caruso and Company. And Caruso, like Robinson
Crusoe.
Yeah. And we said, look, we want to do this. We understand you will customize your things, but this is in the Middle East. And the guy was like, okay. We want to go from Saudi, from Jeddah, all the way through Jordan, through Syria, and then into Israel. And we do not want any flashy cars. We're going under the wire. We're not registering with consulates. And so we're looking for a local hire in their beat up wild car. They're not a taxi service. Never would one driver know the next driver.
Mm-hmm.
And they set it up for us, and it worked.
And yeah.
For any of the border crossings, we walked across. We took whatever vehicle, it was a bus going across the King Hussein Allenby Bridge. And, you know, going back to Jamie, he said, that's Saudis, Jordan. It's westernized. It's a wonderful place. You know, you need to go to Petra. You need to check this out, that out, and castles, and there's this and that. And yeah, 2 weeks, literally, it was like 10 days, 2 weeks, just maybe 12 days before we left. Two hotels in Amman, Jordan were terrible. They weren't totally blown up, but they, you know.
Ooh.
And one was the one we were staying in.
Wow. Jeez.
Okay. We just keep the, absolutely. We'll go. We'll see it. Probably still see the damage. See it. And that's where we were. Going across, how do we want to get into Israel? Want to fly over it? No way. Mm-mm. Go across. Do what people do. Do what the people do.
Wow.
And it's true. You get on a bus and everything about buses and I mean, all we saw, you'd see them all the time, blown up, blown up, blown up.
Yeah, it's stuff that we take advantage of all the time. Like, we don't, everybody here in the States barely thinks about that. Those people are living with such anxiety, you don't know when it's going to happen.
And you can cut it with a knife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can cut it with a knife. You see, you know, all the different people on the bus, and we're standing, just like it says, that's exactly the way what it was like. I mean, no windows open, hot, baby crying, you know, smell of poop. I mean, just all of it. And just the people and the perspiration and the just, you know, quiet and the eyes. And for us, we're watching the two guys outside the bus. And what are they wearing? They're wearing jeans and in denim work shirt, carrying tavers and just, you know, checking things, just going up and down. And then there's another bus way over there. And then another one pulls in over there and they're separated. You're going. And you don't say, okay, we're here. Door opens. Stops. Everybody just relax.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's nuts.
So you think we've got it there. I mean, I've gone on a lot. I hope that's okay.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, that's why we're here. It's just a chat. It's all been very fascinating. I haven't had the fortune to listen to the book yet. It's on my list of things to do, I promise. But even so, the things that you talk about are extraordinary and very interesting, and they inspire moments of thought. So definitely don't feel any guilt or remorse.
Oh, yeah. I would love it if you took the wheel. I mean, I'm sure all of us think the same way. Like, hear your stories. It's awesome.
Yeah, well, see, we pretend to be adventurers over here. But lately, you know, pretending only does so much. Hearing your stories, reading the book, you know, I don't see myself jumping out of any planes, but I can see myself going on a little quest.
For sure. I want to tell you that Miles, because it's in our next book.
Mm-hmm.
Skydiving. It opens. It's not running with the bulls. It's a jump, and it's
cool.
It kicks it off. Just remember that Miles is the one. He's all knowledgeable and all this stuff. He's the one that gets hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you know, all right, let's fix it. Just come here, sit down, you know.
So the running with the bulls, was that a real injury he got as well?
No, it wasn't. He did. He was running with an injury.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So the running with the bulls, good. That was that particular part, exactly, was fabrication. But and he actually got a picture with the bulls right next to him. It's like an AI digitalized picture. It's really cool. And he's like, he looks like a, you know, running. And the bull is right there.
You know? Awesome.
Wild.
Yeah. But Miles trained and did his first jump at 13,000 feet above ground, AGL, above ground level. And it was, he was not, it wasn't a piggyback. He had a guy in front and a guy behind, and he was on communication, and he did the whole freaking jump. You know, it was a 60-second delay, and as his first jump, which is the way they do it now. If you're ready, if you're, you know, you can handle it, and they make a judgment on that.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so I think it's great, and we, in the next book, kind of jump into it.
Cool. What's the usual elevation for normal jumps?
Well, everybody wants to get up high. I don't know what they are today, but it's just a matter of paying to get up to an altitude. But if you're new, you're always jumping with an instructor. Mm-hmm. You're not even allowed near the place without having someone connected with you, because no one wants the liability.
Yeah.
And you'd be insane. I mean, you wouldn't. No one would. I don't know if there's ever a case that someone, you know, tried to just hop on board, or they didn't know what they were doing. And so the altitudes are as high as you can get, because that's where the fun is.
Yeah.
It's in having that space and time, you know, and the highest I've jumped is 16,000 feet, where we're going to do a halo jump. It's high altitude, low opening. It just didn't pan out that day. There were two things that didn't happen, that and also jumping out of the Goodyear blimp.
I don't know if you're around
anymore, but that was...
Was it during the Super Bowl?
What's that?
Was it during the Super Bowl?
A little halftime show?
Yeah.
No, that's the kind of thing that comes to mind when you think of the Goodyear blimp.
Yeah.
But, I think I heard a couple weeks ago that there are like 5 of them left or something. Like less than 10 Goodyear blimps.
Wow. Yeah, you know, they used to be around in the 70s, 80s, and...
I can't imagine
the humanity.
You fly the smallest drone into a Goodyear blimp and bye-bye blimp. I can't. You got to be careful, I guess.
I know. Well, we were all set, and mist came in, and there was concern. It was the only time, but it was all cleared, and it just didn't happen.
Dang.
Same with the halo. It was just the whole thing had to be squashed, but we were ready. We were all outfitted and oxygen and set to go. And it just didn't happen.
But
16,000 feet, I think it was a 90-second delay. They're going, but if you look at a clock or look at your watch and just tick off 60 seconds, and imagine yourself falling through the sky and controlled, but it's pretty trick, you know.
Yeah,
a long time. You know, I'm still falling.
Yeah, it's wild. I can't imagine that. That's terrifying.
Who knows? Maybe someday I'll do it, but boy,
I mean,
that'd
be
always
the way I'd want to go.
Yeah.
It's always been the last thing on my list.
Yeah, there's no need. But, you know,
but I got my little thrill seeking that I like as well. There's just something to full body energy exertion.
Yeah. Well, I haven't done it in a while, and I will this spring.
Awesome.
I pulled my log book out, and it's really wonderful to go back and look at it. And then a box of pictures and articles, and when we started doing these podcasts, because what had happened with me is that when people look at my bio and they see Antarctica, that...
Yeah, that's crazy.
Everybody sits up and is like, and just like with you, I'm thinking, I don't know how we're going to do a podcast, but I love what you do. And I think you're like, cool.
Thank you.
And you seem to have a level of enthusiasm that was, I said, okay, and don't shut it down, Jones, go with it. And I've been doing that. And I have found intersections that I never would have dreamed. And I did a podcast for World Extreme Medicine, and they're international.
Oh, cool.
Really? What's this about? And the guy was just very clear. Anybody that stepped out of a C-130 50 years ago on the Antarctic ice as a pararescue, Antarctica,
yeah.
I want to talk.
Yeah.
I've gone on with my life. That's not, but it is something that's been able to connect dots. You know, you look back at college, high school, graduating, what to do in that summer, in college or no college or work. And you start connecting dots to what's happened in your life. And for me, you know, I'm approaching my seventh decade, like really soon.
And you're still doing all this stuff.
You look good.
Yeah, man.
Happy early birthday.
Thank you. Cinco de Mayo is my birthday.
Oh, okay. Nice. What a great day to be born.
Right on. And I have a brother born on my first birthday. So that's cool, too. I always say I got the best gift. Oh, yeah, fuck you. No, we're good. But so it's I really appreciate that you've read listened, that you know the book, and I'm finding that has happened. Miles said, no, I'm just gonna read the book. I mean, it takes too long, and that's one of the things, to your point, Matt, how do you get the information out? We just thought we have to do a book, and it better be entertaining or they're not gonna read it. Mm-hmm. Or some of the, you know, reviews, and it's just happened. Now we're over 500 reviews, and we're pretty good. And mm-hmm. It's like, okay.
Oh yeah, like it was no problem. Like we both listened to it on Audible. You know, mm-hmm. I've got a boring, brainless job. I just throw my earpieces in, and I just got lost in it. It was awesome.
It's great to have a job like that, because then you're doing two things. I mean, mm-hmm. you're making a day old, but you've got something feeding you, and I find the podcasts have done that for me.
Yeah,
exactly. I've been finding all this kind of info from podcasts while working the day job. You know, really thinking about how the day job sucks.
Yeah,
yeah. Kind of realizing, oh, maybe I don't need to be doing this all the time. So one step at a time. We all wake up to what we really want to do.
And it is a step at a time. You know, there's a quote from Churchill, and I don't know. I've actually typed it out. I've got a couple of quotes, but it has to do with being tapped on the shoulder to do something that is just perfect for you. Hmm. It's the right time. And what a shame if you weren't ready for that mm-hmm. potentially finest hour in your life. And so that was like, whew. It's kind of like not the early Boy Scout saying be prepared, but there is something about being prepared. It's like really not getting lost in the, oh God, I just hate this.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? It's like lifting it up and getting ready. And I have found that, and I've been asked, well, you know, when did you decide you wanted to do that? I said, I didn't. I was tapped. What? Yeah. Well, after you did that, I said, well, because I did that, I was tapped to this.
Yeah, it turns out opportunities come when you're like open to have some.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the bank account sometimes has been really wonderful, and other times it's just sufficient. And a spiritual teacher said to me, sufficient is good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
You know, this American dream, this concept, sufficient. Roof, food, clothing, children okay, doing, you know, don't compare yourself to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, they say, well, how many times have you done that? I say, a lot. Well, how many? Yeah. Well, I've done 78 Summit solos on Bald. Well, you going to do Everest? No, I'm so not. No.
That's a good Golly, choice. Maybe yeah. 20 years ago, but
no.
There's still bodies on that mountain that they can't access to bring
bodies
them down.
Of all ages on that mountain.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is that it's all relative. You guys go on an adventure every time you engage with mm-hmm. this show. It's an adventure, like you said, Matt. You're talking about, you know, it's a level of adventure. It is. Mm-hmm. It's relative. I say, you know, putting a child in a baby carriage, it's all the elements are still there. You got to think about what you're doing. There's going to be, you can't plan for everything. You have to be adaptable mm-hmm. and be prepared. And you're going to go out into the world and cross the street and you take the water bottle and you take a little snack and you do all this stuff. It's an adventure.
Yeah, and we're all just
part of the adventure. You got to make it back. You know, it's like you got to do the full circle.
Safety is fair, I guess. If that's your quest, is to make it back.
Yep. So, it's been beautiful to be able to think about these things and connect the dots and say, oh, well. Adaptability was very important. Mm-hmm. And what are the traits? You know, capacity. And it's like capacity. I've always, you know, you reach a point, you go, you just find you can do more than you ever thought you could. And it's not just physical. It's just on all levels. If you're being put in a position to handle something, basically, you can. It's just being willing, having that will. Okay. I'm gonna try to do this, and I'll take it a little bite at a time, but to go forward and demonstrate that. And that's why the solo sunrise, that's where I found more about myself. You know? Yeah, Mallory was asking, George Mallory is one of my icons. You know, why are you doing this or funding this? Why are you going trying to do Everest? Nobody's done it. And he says, because he's attributed with saying, because it's there. And then what he really did say was, it's not the mountain that we conquer, it's ourselves.
Yeah.
It's we conquer ourselves. And it was 100 years ago. In June of 1924 was his last round. And they saw him way up near the Hillary steps, he and Sandy Erding. And it's been brought back up because Jimmy Chin, a documentarian, he did solo, you know, Alex Honnold's climb. He's done a number of things. And he found on Everest Sandy Erving's boot with his foot still in it.
Oh, I've heard about this. Yeah.
God.
Did you hear that? Is that wild?
Yeah.
And they did the DNA. And you know where it was? It was literally right at the end of a glacier sitting on a rock where the glacier had just been receding.
Wow.
And it was sitting there.
That's crazy.
That's the truth. It was like coming upon it, and it's like, whew, wonder whose foot this is.
Yeah, wild.
Make sure it's not your foot.
And so they've been trying to piece together that. So I really admire that, and there's other, you know, contemporary guys like David Goggins that guy's an animal. He's amazing what he's done in his life. Dark skinned man, black man, going from 300 pounds down to, you know, Navy SEAL.
Okay,
Air Force.
Right. Okay. Wow. That Goggins.
That's right. That Goggins. And check him out, Matt. And he wrote a book, Can't Hurt Me.
I want to say he was on Joe Rogan's podcast years ago.
Absolutely. He's on Joe Rogan, Rich Roll. Those, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he wrote his own book. And the guy uses the word fuck. Like he's ingenious on how he slips that in every two sentences. Just, you know, and he's been able to talk about capacity. He's gone beyond. But when you hear about it, it's like, how did people run the first 4-minute mile? Not that I want to run it, but I appreciate it. How did Ross Edgley swim around the United Kingdom? Well, he did 6 hours on, 6 hours off, 5.5 months. What? Yeah. And he swam around.
That's wild.
Yeah, that's nuts. And because it's there.
You don't have to do it. Yeah, right. You don't have to do it, but we can honor. I mean, look at your heroes in your story.
Mm-hmm.
Heroes and villains and people that go beyond that, you know.
Yeah, how far can you get if you don't think you can get far? You have to
That's true.
Believe in something.
Yeah, I mean, I have people saying, boy, you're really, why are you doing, that's a lot of risk. I don't see it as risk.
Yeah, if you see it as a risk, it's a fear.
The risk to me is someone else's opinion of you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For me, it's like, yeah, I've turned back, and I've learned more turning back than getting to the top. Having to just bite the bullet, and then sitting here and thinking, it's like, oh really? You had to bite the bullet. Would you want to die or not die? You want to you reach that point where you have to call it.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
You know, it's not 50 mile an hour wind. It's 70. You lift your foot and it's swinging you around.
Oh God!
You're falling. You're above the tree line. You're alone. The sun isn't up, and you're not going to see the sun because there ain't no way. It's completely enshrouded.
God.
And so, but you know, you take someone like David Goggins, he'd probably keep going. Me, no. But it was for me. That was my.
That's wise. Very wise.
It was my choice, you know, and that and so the whole concept of risk and stuff is relative, just like adventure is relative. And adventure can be simple, and it's in life too. It's not just climbing a mountain or that you did it so many times. Peak bagging means nothing to me. Accepting when someone says I've done whatever, it's a resolve. It shows me that individual is capable of committing to something that's hard multiple times, or maybe in all different weather or you know, whatever. So it says something about character, not about, you know, pictures.
I think that's actually the most important distinction in the subject of capacity. There's so many people nowadays that place an overabundance of importance on relatively unimportant or overtly simplistic things. But when you're able to take that life wisdom and determine what you fill that capacity with, what is of actual import, then at that point you can acknowledge that the limitless notion of human capacity is an asset and not a hindrance anymore. So I really appreciate that perspective of yours.
Cody. Yeah. Beautifully put.
Thank you.
Yeah. Really clear. Did someone write that down?
It's recording.
That's why he's running our adventure.
Okay, that's cool, because that was very. Isn't it wonderful when ideas come and it's just like, it just flows.
Mm-hmm. It's the best. I think that's why we've been doing the podcast for so long. Well, we were just doing a Pathfinder tabletop role play, you know, basically just doing improv with each other, but that sense of adventure takes over. I poured so much into each of these characters without realizing, like, I thought, you know, oh, I'm just acting like somebody, and then you kind of realize, oh no, I've put my entire self onto the table,
right?
And I remember it like I was there. That's an adventure to me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's vulnerability to it too.
Yeah, great. And I'm all for it. Just
right. It's not just a you know, a character playing a certain role. It's a character that's real.
Yeah, it's got that's wants real. And needs, desires, its own ego.
Right, smells things and is like,
mm-hmm. whatever. Yeah, every character has a piece of us in them. There's no avoiding
that. That's acting, and that's what you have to go on. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. That's what I found. And the more I did, and I love stage, the more I just completely immersed in the moment with the people. And things would come, and it was just like, it became very, that sense of improvisation without throwing the play or the other, the scene partner in the play off. But it is, it's thrilling when you find that open avenue to do that. And that's what I loved about your show. It's just like, whoa, this is cool.
Yeah, we had to do some. I mean, we started right before COVID. What, 2 months before everything shut down?
Yeah, 2019, and then it's like, oh, we couldn't see each other for over a year, and then
yeah.
But it's something that I mean, speaking for myself, it really helped us get through it. Being able to put ourselves into these adventures in a time where, I mean, granted, it hasn't the scope of. Everything hasn't really changed. We've just been dealing with it for so many years now. But it was a bright light in a really dark time for us. And if we can project that for anybody else that's passing by, then that's the key for me.
Yeah. Well, hearing that you listen to the book and you like it, that is like, that's...
Well, that too. How can I expect anybody to stop and listen to me if I don't stop and listen to them?
Yeah.
So yeah, I've been taking more chances with stuff like that too, and I'm glad I listened to your book.
Yeah, and also thank you for reaching out to us. Like when I first got the email, I was like, you know, these days with like scammers, I was like, is this real? There's no way. This guy.
Yeah. First thought was like, that you weren't real. Yeah, I'm like, just being honest. Oh, I just
it's like he's legit. This is awesome.
Yeah, we immediately everybody started going, all right, let's see if this person's real. Started Googling, just trying to figure anything we could.
Yeah. That's cool. Good.
Yeah, it's
where we live, and we have to be mindful. But when it connects, like this is connecting. Mm-hmm. It's and I found that with the last few months, it's just been this whole world of new people. And mostly men. There are some women. I have two podcasts coming up next week with Soul Wisdom and Sacred Travel. And one's a single woman, and she's in, I don't know the town, but she's in Switzerland. So it's been very international.
Wow.
Copenhagen, Singapore, Australia, UK, Spain, and then Canada, and are all around the United States. Just in the last, it'll be close to 4 months, but 3 months.
Nice.
Wow.
And meeting people of integrity that have just, they're good souls. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm. Like I'm feeling here, and it's boy, we all have our challenges in life, but when you can have a conversation and have a story to tell, it binds people
together.
Yeah,
connects the storytelling.
Hell yeah. Yeah,
and that's why I really think we could because we do have our we have our podcast, and that's the shows. I don't know. In some way, if we could just get a recorded session, I mean, pretty much what we've been doing here and now, but in the guise of adventure, because I'm telling you, I see myself going to Egypt sometime, and if you could lay out the groundwork, and talk about your book and talk about the next one coming out, because we need info like this, and I'm an adventurer. Mm-hmm. Infinite adventure. Because a lot of people are just fed up of doing the same thing every day. And it's becoming very clear that we're being used.
Well, in many industries. You can do it, and it's you, and that is individual, the level of sense of adventure, and it should not be compared with anyone else.
No, but just to believe that you can do something outside of your norm.
Just take that step, expand that curiosity, just open it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And once you get a little taste of it, that it's safe, you're okay. You know, I know people are, I got my life together. I'm not, you kidding me?
Hey. And if so, that's awesome. But mine's been shaken up, and I'm ready to do something fun rather than just await the next big fall that happens.
Oh, yeah. Did you hear what he said? Did you hear what's going on?
Yeah.
I know. Yes. I'm barely hanging on, and this podcast gives me purpose, and I'm so glad I got these nerds here to play with me.
You know? Glad to know I'm your one safety line.
I think when you get into adventurers, the real guys, they're pretty humble, you know, and especially if they've been in mortal danger, that's where you find the humility. That's where I found it.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, and it's relative.
For sure.
Whatever anyone has done, somebody's done it more.
Yeah.
You know, but it is something about conquering self. And that's individual. And to reach that point, to find a level of wisdom. I had a conversation with Miles and said, Miles, you know, we're reaching a point in our life where we're going to be the elders. And I really believe, and I mean, this is before the podcast, even before the book, you know, maybe we're writing the book, but it's like we have a responsibility. Pass on ideas, things that have worked. I don't know how it's going to happen, and boom, here we go.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And there's ability to talk kind of within the book and beyond to think people to resonate with, that they're okay, that they've got this and that, and this guy or us, we relate to it. We're good.
Yeah. It's been wonderful talking with you.
Yep, it really is.
I see you. Thumbs up. Thank you. It's like Cousin It, but it's not a head with hair. It's hands.
There's definitely a whole head with hair over there, though.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, there we go.
Oh, hang on one second. I got to turn a mic on. Felicia's pointing at it.
She's trying to get a word in over here.
Okay, try it. Does it work for you?
Hello?
Hello, Alicia.
Hi. I just wanted to say I've been listening the whole time, even though I've been just sitting there being hands painting. But yes. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us. I really appreciate it, and I'm really excited too. I know I'm not a very social person, but I'm really excited.
I can tell, Alicia. You just give the hands first, and then, you know, if we're good, we get the elbow.
Exactly. I gotta feel it out, you know? I'm like a cat.
I love it.
But yeah, you seem cool, so.
Thank you.
I thought
Thank
I'd say
you.
Hi.
Yeah, and I feel the same way about all of you. And this has been great. Very good.
Hell yeah, Wells, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah,
well. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. No rush. We're in. And in the meantime, you got the move. Yep, you got the move, and we all have got things going on. So onward. Let's just keep at it.
Yeah, we all got stories to tell. It's going to happen.
Yep.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. We'll get in contact with you soon.
Cool. All for it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, guys. Matt, Cody, Matt, Alicia, good night.
Have a good night.
Good night.
So long.